Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're gonna get Amin in those, so you gotta listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, and I'm joined back again like he never left. Nando Vila, what's going on, bro?
How's it going, man? Good to be here.
Fantastic, fantastic. You know, you celebrated we celebrated a birthday of yours not too long ago. That was a great time out in, what's it called? La Quinada?
La Quinada, dude.
La Quinada, which I'd never been to in my life. Oh my goodness.
If you ever go back there for any other reason other than like just going back to that house, I'd be really shocked.
Yeah, it's never gonna happen. It's never gonna happen. I used to think Encino was the burbs, it's just not.
Yeah.
Like if you go over there, I was like, wow, like this is suburban right here. This is white picket fence, American dream type of situation. Yeah. But yeah, we had a great time. You know what I mean? Great grub, swimming, great wine. Just an incredible time for your birthday.
Hell yeah.
On today's show, we want to get into the Senate race. I had Jess Burbank from TYT Rebel HQ up here last week in your stead. We were supposed to get into the Senate race, but we got into all kinds of other stuff. And so we didn't. So I figured we'd give the people a sort of like just a quick overview of the important sort of swing races that are going on right now. Just a couple of them, just to pick them out. Yeah. But first, man, what I wanted to talk to you about was two articles I read today, actually, this morning. One was in Jacobin Mag, where they're talking about, you know, polls are showing that the economy is essentially all they care about, economy, inflation, how they're going to pay for groceries and rent and all of these ridiculous increases, and how the Dems are essentially ignoring this fact. And not just cynically because they're ostensibly in control and these things are happening under their watches, but some substantive reasons as to why they're not, and you know, the things that they've decided to make their messaging. And then, of course, I read in the New York Times that Procter & Gamble and Nestle, they're reporting great profits. You know, they're like, look, people aren't buying as much, but our price gouging and price hikes are such that we've maintained, you know, our profit range, right? Like the range of profit that we're used to, essentially, which means that everybody else feels the pain except for major corporations. Like we all will bear the brunt of, you know, the after effects of a pandemic, inflation, et cetera. We'll all feel that pain at the pump, in our rent prices, at the grocery store, et cetera. But big business, no. Ooh, we too big to fail, baby. And I just found that fascinating for a couple of reasons, right? I was listening to This Is Revolution this morning as I was working out. And shouts to our brothers over there, my man Gene Bajlan, Pascal Robert, Jason Miles, all my dogs over there. And they had Derek Davison of American Prestige, friends of the show. That's damn near our brother podcast, right? And they were talking about the Saudis and sort of U.S. foreign policy. And I thought Gene brought up, and Pascal both had the point about, you know, the sort of Democrats' shtick right now is this kick about democracy and saving democracy and, you know, and the Putin is an enemy of democracy, and you know, we got to preserve liberal democracy all over the world, and that's why you got to put a Ukraine flag up, and that's why we got to fund the military to the tune of $40 billion in democracy. And you know, it got me to thinking, honestly, Nando, I'm like, well, democracy in a country that's, you know, two-party rule monopoly, if you even want to even think about getting into a House race, don't even think about getting into a Senate race where you got to raise like in certain states, it's like $100 million. Like that's about as anti-democratic as it gets, right? And this money that you're raising isn't individual citizens, like some populist support that you're getting. You're raising it from corporate actors, right, who have an outsized influence on our democracy, right? And like this democracy that they're fighting for and they're standing up for is like, it's really not all that democratic. Like I'd love to hear them at least acknowledge this shit, right? How just anti-democratic so much of our system is. But whatever, like I just thought about like the shit that the Dems are going with, which is like, you know, they're coming to take your abortion away, which again, we think is important. People should have access to abortion. And, you know, we got to protect the democracy and, you know, the voting and the this and, you know, vote, as Obama would say, vote. You don't like how it's going? Vote.
Don't boo.
Vote. You know, don't boo. Vote. You know, all of the patronizing that these cats do. And then, you know, you realize that, like, the things that people care about, they're not even running on.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's remarkable because it's happening in the midst of this inflation that you mentioned in the beginning, because it is true that they're not running on stopping the inflation. They're not running on the economy because mostly they're on board with the Federal Reserve's policy of essentially purposefully engineering a recession, which is going to be disastrous for not just for the millions of working people who are going to be affected by it, but also the Democrats, because if it happens under their watch, you know, they get blamed for it. This really hasn't happened. The sort of Federal Reserve induced recession hasn't happened since in 40 years, since the Volcker shock of the late 1970s, again, under a Democratic president, which led to basically an entire decade of Republican dominance. In politics.
Well, why would the Democrats want to avoid that?
Who knows? But they're not running on that because they're basically on board as that the only thing that they can do with this inflation is to induce a recession, which is ridiculous, you know, and it's counterproductive and stupid. And yeah, they're running on these kind of high-minded ideals at a moment when people are feeling the pinch in their wallet, and that's just kind of a recipe for disaster. I mean, the only saving grace is the Republicans are just, you know, psychotic, frothing at the mouth reactionaries, which are also very unpopular. So it's the only reason why the Democrats even have a prayer in in this election. Like, this should be an absolute wave election. Just given the economic.
And by the way, it might prove to still be that.
I think it's still like over 50% that they lose. I'm just saying that they should be losing big given the economic situation of the vast majority of people. But yeah, I mean, it's this, I don't think people realize just how reckless the Federal Reserve's policy is, because this is the first time this is really being tried in a globalized economy, you know, like ever since globalization really kicked in the 90s, and now has just like fully taken, like, you know, capital is just fully integrated into a global system. We don't really know how this is going to behave. And it just belies the lack of imagination and the lack of politics that exists, not just here, but really all over the Western world, in that that's our only solution to inflation rather than figuring out how to stop it at the root, which, by the way, it's largely driven by supply chain issues as a result of COVID and the war in Ukraine. You know, there is obviously no talk of stopping the war in Ukraine. We're just fueling it as much as we can. You know,
now Ukraine's going to win it. So backing the winning side.
We're going to be at this for 10 years. Energy prices are fucking soaring in Europe. Like, I think in Spain, it's like, you know, like, I mean, it's crazy, like how people are, you know, getting pinched just by the energy prices because the gas from Russia is getting cut off. And then they're looking for other sources of energy, driving energy prices up everywhere, you know? It's clearly driven by the war in Ukraine. So just inducing a recession in the midst of that seems crazy. There is a solution that used to happen back in the day, like in the middle of the 20th century, when this country had large unions. It's basically what would happen is like politicians would sit down at a table with the union leaders and like the representatives from like the business associations. And we're like, okay, let's just work it out. Like what negotiation can we live with on a price fixing, essentially? Like, let's fix the prices for energy. Mm-hmm. Let's fix the prices for food. Let's fix that. And like, it was like this, the unionized sectors representing, i.e. like regular people, you know, like they're workers, but also just generally the American public, just sitting at a table and hashing it out. They used to call it like beer summits or something like that, like what Obama did with the COP and Henry Louis Gates.
It was called the beer summit.
Yeah, they would just they would literally
heard, but yes, the beer summit.
Yeah, they would just sit down at the table and fix the prices instead of just like raising interest rates, inducing a recession, throwing millions of people out of work, getting another million people like just very like much more precarious. And yeah, so it's a bad situation, and the Democrats are just doing nothing to stop it.
Man, and just so our listeners can understand like the logic of the Federal Reserve, right? Like the Fed chairman, he comes out, what's his fucking name? Powell.
Jerome Powell.
Was appointed.
But he's a white guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds. That's a black name. That's a classic. That's a classic. Powell.
Like, did he play black in NFL in the like in 1980s?
Yeah. It's like the opposite of the Celtics' new coach Joe Mazzulla. Which right. is like, wait, that's not a Goomba from Bensonhurst? That's crazy. Powell came out and said, yo, workers are feeling the squeeze of price increases of, you know, all over the place. Wage increase has not met the rate of inflation, right? Like, he says that, like, because remember, they were talking all this shit about how workers are making so much and it's fucking up the economy and that's what's causing the inflation. And he's like, well, no, actually, their wages aren't even at the rate of inflation right now. Like, workers are getting their asses kicked. So they recognize that's already happening. And essentially, the idea, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nando, is that they put enough people out of work, thereby making their less customers for these goods, and that being the thing that drives the prices down.
It drives everything down. It drives wages down, you know, because when you have more people out of work, there's less, you know, there's more, you know, there's more supply.
Scarcity of the work, yeah.
Yeah, so you drive wages down. You basically you raise interest rates, which makes it harder to borrow money, which makes it harder for businesses to invest in things, to buy goods, to whatever. So it reduces economic activity. People buy fewer cars, people buy fewer houses, people buy fewer things. Like, when you can't borrow, you just buy less shit. And businesses also like invest in less shit, produce less shit, because it's just the cost of money is higher. So you reduce economic activity, you slow down the economy, you tick up unemployment, and that should bring prices down. The problem is that's really like just causing a lot of suffering just to bring prices down, instead of instituting some negotiated price control system, right? Which you just like literally just, you know, you eat it out of the profits, right? You just kind of say like, okay, you have to reduce the profits and we make the workers whole. And that usually comes out of some, again, under, you know, mid 20th century capitalism, it usually came out of a tripartite negotiation between employers, employees, and then the state kind of mediating in the middle. So that's basically what it is. The problem is that, like, the Federal Reserve is saying, like, oh, we'll just uptick inflation to, like, you know, 4.4% or whatever by increasing interest rates by, you know, 1 or 2% or whatever they're doing. And like as if that was like a chemistry experiment, you know what I mean? But it's not. They don't fucking know. Like, they could just like skyrocket unemployment to like 8%, and then I'll be like, ah, they're like, what the fuck? You know, like, it's not like a exact science in that way. Especially, like I said, this is the first time they're trying it under a fully globalized economy. So there's gonna be kind of like all kinds of weird after effects they don't understand. The basic trade off was, like, to understand it kind of in the simplest terms, right, is when there's inflation, every worker suffers, like everybody suffers, right? When you tick up unemployment by a few percentage points, maybe like 2 out of every 20 people will get fired and those people will suffer, but the other 18 will be slightly better. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like, you're just, if that's like the grim trade-off, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're like, let's just fucking execute 2 people. Yeah. So that we all just kind of live a little better. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Instead of kind of finding another way to do it, like I said, that there are, but they're just not politically viable.
And, you know, and what you just described, Nando, about mid 20th century government policy to deal with this kind of stuff, to make sure people didn't get completely squeezed by these forces that aren't controlled by people. It's just, you know, kind of forces that happen within the magical market, right? These are just problems that arise in capitalism. Like, it just is. Like, you know, and again, you're never allowed to talk about this in mainstream culture, media, whatever, and be like, isn't this just a function of capitalism that these fuck ups happen, that the Fed has to step in this way, that, like, isn't this just a byproduct of the system? You're never going to hear anybody say that. But what that's called is, you know, price controlling. Like, yeah. The government stepping in and literally controlling the price of goods. And that is an absolute dirty word. dirty term in today's Democratic Party. Like you can, like that. That's no.
Yeah.
No, Joe Biden, he would never utter those words out of his mouth. Like, yo, we need to control prices. Like, they just don't. Like, the ideology in the mainstream of the Democratic Party is just unabridged, unabashed. Just let them rip and run capitalism.
Yeah. No, and you know, those of us on the left, like socialists, what we want to do is decommodify the vast majority of goods and services that essentially are, that are essential, right? Mm-hmm. Especially healthcare, housing,
school,
and healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the idea being that, like, if those things are publicly run, publicly owned, like if we built like public housing and most people lived in public housing, like the way they do in Vienna, Austria, for example, then it becomes much easier to resist those booms and busts of prices. You know what I mean? Like housing prices remain relatively stable because the government just kind of owns them and they just kind of set the rents and like, mm-hmm. you know, if they need more money, then they can tax people to get it. Usually in an ideal world, you tax the wealthiest, right? To claw back that money. You know what I mean? And so like, that's why we want to decommodify housing, healthcare, you know, essential food, the basics, you know what I mean? Because that will allow people to survive these ups and downs, which inevitably happen from, you know, whatever natural disaster or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, like things happen.
It should happen. Global pandemic, whatever.
Yeah, you know, shit happens. When shit is decommodified, it is easier for the state, especially in an era of like advanced computers. I mean, this was always like the problem in like the early 20th century when these control economies tried to do that, is that there was like, you know, there wasn't just like the computing power to be able to, you know, manage these complex economies. Like these days, I mean, that's one of the books, like, I think it's Lee Phillips who wrote a book called, like, something like Red Walmart or something, where he posits, like, the idea of, like, Walmart essentially is, like, a centrally planned economy that controls prices.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodles is like,
ah, whatever. Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with the plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for your eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
Like, if that was just publicly owned for different goals other than profit.
Right.
Like, you know, they have the skills to, like, adjust, you know, on a very quick level.
Walmart, because they can, like, your local grocery store, which could be selling whatever. Walmart's going to be like, no, you're not selling it for that price because we're selling it lower than your ass.
Right.
And we're going to put you out of business if you don't meet us at that price. Right. And, you know, they're big enough to do it for their own ends. But if we could do it to the benefit of the public, and some people might say, well, you're putting that local grocer out of business. Well, maybe you shouldn't be in business where you selling baby formula to folks, man. Maybe that shouldn't be a business, you know?
Yeah.
Like, maybe that just shouldn't be a business. Or if it is, it's owned and ran in some kind of profit-sharing situation with the government, sort of like the MTA in New York. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's both public and whatchamacallit, private. And, you know, the reason why the MTA can't come out tomorrow and be like, yeah, we charging y'all $6 for fares is because, nah, like, it's co-owned by the government as well, right? And so, yeah, at worst, maybe we could do this public-private partnership. But, like, man, yo, like, you know, people selling you medical insurance, like, that can't be the wave. And, yes, and the reason why the Dems can't come out against Procter and Gamble and, you know, motherfucking Nestle, like that New York Times piece suggested, because that is the Democratic Party. They are the Democratic Party. Like, these corporations are who make up the brain trust of the party. So the people who are actually causing the problems, people like certain kind of Democrats can just say, you know, it's kind of fucked up that the corporations are just killing it in profits. And the only people feeling any of the pinch are us. Like they don't feel anything. They didn't make any sacrifices. They didn't do any belt tightening. They didn't do any of that. Just the only people feeling the pain is us. They can't even come out and say, like, these are the people doing it. You know, so here's what we're going to do about it, because that's ridiculous. You can't. The Democratic Party's not going to do something about the Democratic Party, essentially.
Yeah. 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 It's I mean, it's just. Great,
it's great all around. It's fantastic. Great. I love when we could just deliver the best news to the audience. Nah. And yeah, and that just, you know, it just took me out because, again, like I said, I've been on this, like, sort of just wariness of this good versus evil fucking shit that the Dems are always going with. And, you know, yes, I think denying a rape victim abortion is evil. And, like, in that case, yes, there's a sort of, like, you know, obvious fucked upness about all of that. But, like, man, you can't tell, like, you can't apply this sort of bipolar logic to every single thing. And they just use it to just manipulate cats, you know, where it's just like, yeah, if you don't support Ukraine, you know, this woke war, because this war is woke, don't you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't support this woke war, you're an asshole. You know, if OnlyFans doesn't put the Ukraine flag when you're signing in, there's some assholes. You don't want to jag off with some assholes.
The Ukraine stuff, man, is grim. I mean, I mean, you're just like, we're just like, you know, plowing, you know, we're just like throwing down the thrusters into the iceberg. You know, and just not even like anyone who tries to consider, like, maybe we should avoid the iceberg. Is like smeared as, you know.
Well, Nando, don't you want the democracy around the world?
Yeah,
don't you want,
like, democracy? No. I'd rather like just not do nuclear war.
Yeah. Know? How about that? How about we just don't want the war?
Like, maybe we should, like,
let's work towards stopping the war. And if the Russians got to win some, so be it. Okay. Yeah. Like that's what happens when you're Ukraine and they're Russia. Right. So be it. The Russians might have to get a win out of this. Yeah. If that means this shit stops and we move on with our lives, then yeah. It's like, well, how would you feel if you were Ukrainian? It's like, bro.
Not good. I mean, well, that's the thing is like the real policy should be like investing bajillions of dollars in like, you know, a refugee program that like helps people resettle. Sure. Like if they want, you know, like
that would be fire. Time.
We would never invest in that, you know?
No. Bring them to Encino, you know? Man.
Yeah. Like that, you know, you know, what Russia did is a world historic crime. Like no one's denying that. Is it worth committing suicide over, you know?
No.
Like ending humanity?
And again, like, it doesn't help to do this good versus evil rhetoric against the Russians. That's not going to, like, we need to get to a point where we can negotiate a ceasefire, like a stop to all of this. And be like, yo, like, all right, you guys are dying to have some type of win out of this. And like, all right, Ukraine just going to have to eat it. And that's kind of what happens. Like, you know, that's what happens when we do business with any other fucking nation that we decide we want to fuck with. We get our way every single time. It don't matter if it's a dictator that we're getting out of the way or the democratically elected regime. We get our way all the time. Like other countries are gonna have that dominion, especially over a place that's like in their backyard. But you know, nah, the evil Russians. If we don't keep supporting a war against the evil Russians, we're bastards for that. It's ridiculous, you know. And again, it would feel like the Russian-Ukraine thing is a part, but it's not. It's of a piece of the messaging of mainstream Democratic Party, where it's this bullshit about preserving democracy. And it's nothing about like, yo, what are these people going to do tomorrow when their rent goes up in a way that their job hasn't given them a raise to cover?
Yeah.
Fuck the war Ukraine got to do with it, you know? Yeah. But, you know, such is life. But I do want to move on to the Senate races, man, because I think it's fascinating what's happening in Pennsylvania with Fetterman and Dr. Oz, which, again, I have to preface this by saying, like, the idea that the Dems can't just beat Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, which is...
I mean, like I feel like that one's a little bit of bad luck. I mean, the Fetterman stroke really seems tough. To be evening it up. Like, because Fetterman was going to destroy him, you know? He was running a good campaign but then he fucking went off, you know, like we can't have nice things, you know, like Fetterman actually did seem like a kind of, you know, he's not like Bernie in the sense that he's definitely not as
he's not a socialist.
He's not like a proper socialist the way Bernie is, like a dyed in the wool. But like, you know, in terms of like a populist kind of left candidate that could kind of break some of this class demobilization that the Democrats are embarking upon, which is just like abandoning working class voters. Like Fetterman did seem like the guy that could maybe stop that trend and maybe even reverse it. Like, you know, win some working class voters. He performed pretty like relatively well compared to other Democrats in with those voters. And then he just goes off and has a fucking stroke, you know, like
it's worse
bad,
luck.
That's kind of it's bad luck for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, I mean, it is kind of shocking that, you know, there is a chance that Dr. fucking Oz is going to be a senator, you know, like that, we're not talking about no congressman, you know, like senator. Is,
oh, my God.
Senators, like, there's only 50 of them, you know,
bro. Senator, the most hallowed body institution. Yeah. These people have been smelling their own farts for hundreds of years.
Let's imagine Dr. Oz winning the Senate. And he just like saddles over to the Senate cloakroom and meets, like bumps into Tommy Tuberville. You know, could you imagine him being like, hey, yeah, coach?
Who's quarterbacking this
bill?
Who's quarterbacking this bill is hilarious. The idea that either of those two clowns would be trying to do anything legislatively just cracks me up. But yeah, the Fetterman thing is unfortunate because, you know, to relate it back to what we were just talking about, it's like this dude was up there talking about these bread and butter issues. And he was doing it in a sort of way. He's not like, you know, just think of your normal, boring, annoying.
He's not annoying. Yeah, he's not
Tim Kaine.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's just not that.
He's not O'Rourke.
Exactly. Yeah. He's not, oh my God, Beto. He's not Beto O'Rourke. Like, he's like a normal seeming dude talking about shit that his constituents care about. And he's of the land, he's of the people. And like, man, this guy managed to win the fucking nomination of the Democratic Party in a real important state of Pennsylvania. And running, man, against
the National Democrats, like, you know, they had another guy. The fucking Democratic Party wanted some other guy, some fucking guy. You know what I mean? Like a Tim Kaine ass motherfucker.
Some dude, you know what I mean? Some schmuck that was part of the club.
Yeah.
Essentially.
They did not want him. And again, like I said, like, I mean, much has been made about like, oh, there's no successor to Bernie. Bernie's old. Like, oh, AOC, she's like on the cover of Vogue. And like, that doesn't seem like, you know, the best kind of, you know, strategy to like win over working class. But you know what I mean? Like, okay, so maybe it's not AOC. Maybe she's too like, she comes off as like kind of like a Democrat plus, if that makes sense. Like, a, you know, she's coastal and educated and into like, you know, I don't know, whatever. But like, you know, Fetterman did seem like, even though like AOC probably is like a socialist, like she probably is like a, like in her heart of hearts, like in her ideology or whatever. And Fetterman is not, but Fetterman does seem to have the potential to mobilize working class voters the way Barack Obama did. You know what I mean? Which they've been bleeding, you know, since then, since 2008, when Obama won a majority of white working class voters. People forget. You know what I mean?
Insane. Like, which is, could you even imagine any Democrat doing that tomorrow?
No.
Impossible.
Impossible. So yeah, I mean, he seemed like maybe he's the guy who's gonna, maybe like if he becomes a national politician, he can sort of turn the tide around this kind of class demobilization, which is poison for not just the Democrats, but for the entire kind of political spectrum. Like, nothing can be worse than two parties that dominate politics, both of which are kind of split in terms of their class alignment. You know, that like there's rich people in their support Republicans, and there's working class people that support Republicans, and then there's rich people that support Democrats. And
that means that, which means that the only thing that will ever get done, exactly, the only thing that will ever get done is rich people shit.
Like, you, that's obvious.
That's obvious.
And then the politics, but then all we talk about is bullshit, you know, because like, so like, what, pick one or the other, you know, like Republicans or Democrats. Like, I'm skeptical that the working class will kind of take over the Republican Party. You know what I mean? Like, there's some people, even on the left, like Glenn Greenwald kind of thinks that there's this movement that's going to happen where like there's going to be a class realignment, you know, where like Democrats in the 20th century used to be the party of the working class. Like, ever since, you know, the sort of early part of the 20th century and through basically the 1980s and 1990s, the Democrats had a strategy, a clear strategy to just win over working class voters. They had a majority, dominated Congress and Senate for all those decades. And the Republicans had the bourgeois. That has been just completely, that's over. I'm skeptical that it will actually flip, you know, that the Republicans will become the party of the majority working class.
I mean,
and that the Democrats just don't have,
they're not going to give out enough of the trinkets, man. It's only been so much of this. The religiosity, yes, that works. I think the cop shit is really working class. Like, to be honest, like the cop fucking. Yeah. I think that is like super working class. Is like,
yeah, I just know, look at everyone you've ever seen with like a Blue Lives Matter sticker on the back of their car. Like, it's not a guy driving a fucking Tesla.
It's not,
you know, on the Upper West Side or whatever.
I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know that they got enough trinkets to give out. Because some of their shit is just so hollow, but who knows, man? They always figure out a way, don't they?
Yeah.
They just always seem to figure out a way to keep the train rolling. Like, some of the, like, the school stuff where it's like this trans kid shit, like, working class families don't want to hear about that shit, bro. Like, I'm sorry, like, people don't want to hear it, but they skew way more conservative on this stuff. That shit is effective with working class families, where they're like scaring the shit out of them and saying like, oh, there's teachers dressing up as cats and like all of this crazy shit. They're eating tuna fish out of a can and shit. All this crazy shit they're feeding. Not to say that like, oh, all of these non-college educated family type situations or like idiots or whatever. I'm just saying, like, the school fear mongering, the school closing shit, the religiosity, the cop shit, a lot of that speaks to a broad spectrum of working class people. Like, yeah, a lot of black people don't want to hear about cop loving, cop fucking, but a lot of the rest of them do, bro. Like, including Hispanics, bro. Like, a lot of them do be loving cop fucking. So, like, they're on to something. I just don't know. I think there's a limit to what they can offer.
I mean, there's going to be a rupture at some point, you know, but it could last. I mean, so Matt Karp wrote a really great article for Jacobin several months ago, maybe even a year ago, like, that I think everyone should read. It's a long one, but I think everyone
should read. We had Matt Karp up here. That was a great episode.
Yeah, we had him on. He describes what the politics were like in the second half of the 19th century, which is the first Gilded Age, right? Which was remarkably similar to ours in that there was a two-party system and the parties were split amongst working-class voters and kind of bourgeois capitalists, you know? So there was like, the Democrats were a combination of like Southern planter gentry racists and then Irish workers in the North, you know what I mean? And Italian workers like in New York City. And the Republicans were a combination of black people, poor working class black people, and like railroad tycoons. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like nothing got done. Only things that, like you said, benefited the rich. And they just spent all day yelling about bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, kind of like what we do now in politics. We spend all day yelling about bullshit instead of just kind of like, okay, this is the pie. How are we going to split it up? You know, like a little bit for you, a little bit for me here. And like, this is like the everlasting fight. And that's what happens in a politics that is class aligned, you know, in which there's two parties, one of which is for the rich, one of which is for the poor. And they fight it out. You know what I mean? That's kind of how politics was in the 20th century. And it's been de-aligned in a way that has made everyone go crazy. You know, and there's going to be a rupture at some point because there's going to be some sort of movement from below. I mean, they're doing everything possible to keep us, you know, medicated and sanitized and entertained and things like that, like kind of keeping us, you know, comfortable as best we can to avoid that. But eventually that's going to break and there's going to be some sort of rupture from below. But that's going to be hard to predict. It's going to come out of nowhere. We're never going to be able to see it coming. And whether that turns into like a working class Republican Party or a working class Democratic Party or just something else that's even more unstable and scary is just impossible to predict. But that's kind of where we're at right now. We're stuck in this perpetual shouting match in which nothing of substance ever is even discussed, let alone acted upon.
Man, again, more just rosy dispositions from the woke bros. That's our show for today. Make sure you become a Patreon at patreon.com/countthedings. We're up in the content on that thing. A lot of special goodies we got on Patreon these days. So please make sure you support this show by a cup of coffee per month on patreon.com/countthedings. We'll be back next week. Peace out, y'all.